Welcome back to WBFO's special program, The Education Experience. When we recorded our very first cafeteria chats at the Charter School for Applied Technology in Buffalo, bullying surfaced as a topic of concern for high school students.
I've been bullied for 11 years of my life, and I'm still bullied.
One of the most profound bullying stories emerged during our chat. Sherry Chasmidia is a junior. She says she gets bullied because she's diabetic.
Because of my diabetes, I am a type 1, and many students are like, oh, it's diabetes girl, or, oh, you know, my machine beeps, so everyone's like, oh my God, she's dying, and it's horrible sometimes, and it's really stressful, but I just kind of think of, oh, it's gonna go away eventually.
Junior Katie Jo Williams also described being bullied.
Back in middle school, elementary going into middle school, I was bullied a lot. It shut me out of everybody else now. Because back then I was such a social butterfly. I talked to everyone. I tried to be friends with everyone. I was just that nice of a girl. And now I just have my few close friends.
What do you get bullied about?
I was called a prostitute back in elementary school. I didn't know what it was until I asked my mom when I went home that day, and she told me what it was and why I wanted to know. I told her I'd been called it in one of my art classes.
Is it a different culture for the girls?
Yeah.
The male students gave us a different perspective on bullying. They said they actually experience more camaraderie with their friends.
Nobody really get bullied because everybody get along. Like, everyone gets along here.
Denison Stone is a senior.
Have you ever experienced it yourself, though?
No.
Have you watched anybody or know anybody that's experienced it?
No.
Are the policies here pretty strict?
It is, yes.
In the city of Niagara Falls, high school students talked about the added layer of cyberbullying.
Hi, I am Nico Salambeni.
My name is Christian Moreno.
My name is Allie Hubert.
My name is Tyler Sanders.
Sanders tells us he comes from a stable household with strong support from both parents who make sure he completes his academics and sports. One of the issues we presented in this cafeteria chat was the issue of teen violence. These students tell us it happens both in and out of school.
There's a lot of teen violence everywhere, not even just in our school. Outside of our school, there's just a lot of anger in people, and fighting's one way that people get their violent beliefs out.
Definitely, it's definitely widespread, especially in a lot of the inner city areas and stuff like that.
Kristen Maranto tells us he's witnessed a couple of fights in school, but he's never experienced teen violence personally.
People don't want to feel like undermined by other people, and I guess the quickest way there in their mind to solve the problem is through violence.
Well, once you hear like the yelling and all the smack talking go on, then everyone starts to gather around, and the two kids involved definitely, they're almost like amped from it, and then the fight happens.
Nico Salambeni says in-school fights don't occur too often, and the worst thing to do is get involved. He credits the school for taking quick action when fights break out.
Deans are almost already there, so they're really quick, and the deans really take a good job of it, but they can only do so much. Like, stuff can still happen outside of school.
But these students tell us that they believe teen violence is everywhere.
I actually do have a comment on, fights and physical violence, especially in school.
Allie Hubert says she believes violence among teens is widespread.
Most of us have come to the thinking that it's because they don't actually want to fight. It's just a way to pose and say, I'm cool, or I'm like powerful, or I'm strong. But really, they just want, like, people who fight want the fight to be broken up as soon as possible because they don't want to get hurt.
Hubert suspects some of the fights are spawned by social media. Now, she doesn't personally deal with cyberbullying, but some of her friends have experienced the problem.
It's just mentally really affected them in a negative way. It can be anything from personal, academics, weight, a lot of body image, or just because somebody else might be jealous of you, or people really bully other people for no reason.
Surprisingly, this group of students claims they're not hooked on social media sites because they're so involved in balancing their academics and their commitments to sports. Moranto says he doesn't use a lot of social media.
Personally, it's juggling my athletics and my academics. I'm a three-sport athlete and also an honor student. At the same time, take a lot of AV classes, and it's very hard for me to juggle both things.
Like Maranto, Sanders doesn't use a whole lot of social media, but he too is aware of other students who face bullying and cyberbullying.
Well, I try to stay out of as much drama as I possibly can, personally, so I can't really be put in that situation.
Cyberbullying, talk of teen violence, and time management, the repeated themes we continue to hear at our cafeteria chats. But at each school table, students share their diverse views and unique perspectives of being a teen.
Sometimes I tend to hang out more with the guys who do sports just because it's out of as much drama.
For me personally, just being able to juggle like sports and academic life has been the hardest thing to do so far.
I do not manage my time very well, so I'm often up very late doing my work, but it's worth it so I can do my athletics.
Personally, right now it's mostly between work and school, as well as getting scholarships and college education, like getting ready for college and prepping into that transition to my adulthood.
WBFO News hosted a live Facebook panel discussion called Cyberbullying, A Relentless Cycle, to present strategies to help students, parents, and teachers. We navigated the discussion, starting with the powerful story from a Williamsville mother, Tracy Rodemeyer, about her son Jamie, the Williamsville teen who took his life in 2011 because of bullying.
And that's my advice to you from her. You were born this way, and all you have to do is hold your head up. Hold your head up and you'll go far.
Were you first aware of that YouTube clip that he made at the time?
Unfortunately, I did not get to see that video until the rest of the world did. And basically, we were patrolling the kids, you know, to watch what they put on the internet, because it's always out there. So I used to warn the kids, especially Jamie, just to think before you put something out there. If you're gonna put something out there, you know, we need to see it. But of course, Jamie, being a 14-year-old boy, decided to act on his own. And I think it's because he was so passionate about people, how they were getting bullied, that he wanted to see if he could help others. And we didn't realize till after he had passed that he was helping so many people that were getting bullied, a lot of them the LGBT. But again, that was Jamie's way, I think, even of convincing himself that that times are tough here, but it will get better.
Can you talk about how that bullying didn't quite stop after his death, unfortunately? I know your daughter dealt with it, too.
Yeah. Here it was, you know, when we set up the funeral for Jamie, we made sure we put it on a Saturday so all the kids from the schools can go and, you know, not miss out. But it was a couple days prior that Alyssa and Jamie were planning on attending the school dance. It would have been Jamie's first, as he was just in school now for a week and a half. So they had both bought their tickets, and after Jamie had passed, I figured with what our family was going through that Alyssa probably wouldn't be going to the dance, but she said she wanted to be with some of her friends, and I figured it would probably be a good opportunity for her to kind of get away from the situation and get away from the sadness and get a little bit more support. So she went off to the dance and she was all excited. So at one point, they had requested that a Lady Gaga song for Jamie. And everyone of Jamie's friends got into a circle and they were all chanting, you know, just things about Jamie, good things, you know, because it's all his friends and such. And all of a sudden, some of the kids that were bullying Jamie all these years started to chant, you know, Jamie's dead, Jamie's dead. You know, basically that they were happy about it and it, you know, should have happened, it's about time it happened, that kind of stuff. So here I am hosting people at my house, and this was after one of the wakes, and all of a sudden Alyssa comes home crying and crying because she couldn't believe that, you know, she was going there for support. She expected everyone to be there to give her the support that she needed, hold her hand, you know, console her, and she was just outraged with the hate that was still out there, even after a passing of a young boy.
Guiding us with their expertise on cyberbullying were Amanda Nickerson, director of UB's Alberti Center for Bullying Abuse and Prevention, and Daniela Wolf, a social worker at the Amherst School District and also serves as a Dignity Act coordinator.
I think we're working actually very collaboratively in the prevention efforts as far as trying to educate students not only about, you know, what you said, what you're posting, the permanency of what you're posting and what you're saying and how many people can reach, but also just even the character of empathy. You know, a lot of times they can't see that person's reaction to what they post, and so it's hard for them to put themselves in that other person's shoes. So really helping them to, you know, be able to empathize with how somebody might feel when they hear something and be able to put themselves in somebody else's situation before they say something or to motivate them to respond to something is I know, a lot of what we've been doing.
I mean, before 1999, there were no anti-bullying laws, and now every state in the United States has anti-bullying laws, and most of them include cyberbullying, which I think for schools is really a shift. I mean, the conversation even 10 years ago to think that what happened, because cyberbullying, let's face it, a lot of it happens outside of the school day. And so the question then was, well, to what extent are schools responsible or should be intervening in something that may not even be happening when someone can look at it? That conversation is almost absent now. I think that schools, at least in New York State, with the Dignity for All Students Act, any cyberbullying that impacts the children in school can and should be under the purview of schools. So I think it's getting better.
Tracy, how did you feel the way it was handled?
When he was getting picked on, no one really talked about it. I mean, we had the conversation with him all the time, and we would even pull him aside from Alyssa so he wouldn't feel embarrassed. But I never, or the family, we never wanted to talk to friends about it because we thought it would embarrass Jamie or whatever. So you never really heard about bullying until Jamie's incident happened. Then all of a sudden it got out there, and now you're hearing the schools talking about it. Before, they just would kind of tell them, like, buck up.
We always encourage, if it's students that are coming to us, or when we go into health classes and educate students on what to do, we ask them to take screenshots if possible. Having documentation is always very helpful so that it doesn't become one student's word against another. Students can report anonymously. I've had parents call me, you know, just to say, hey, this is going on online. You might want to check into it, follow up, and we always try to investigate any report that we get so that students know, you know, we're supporting them, we're listening. You know, we encourage students to definitely not respond because I think that only encourages what the bully is looking for as far as a response. And then, you know, for them to report it to whatever social media site that they're on, and if need be, block any kind of further communication. But anyone, students, parents, can contact usually school administrators or a social worker or anyone in the guidance office, you know, and let us know what's going on.
I think most schools are offering information sessions for parents that I'm aware of. An ongoing problem, in all honesty, is getting parents to show up. I know I've done parent groups. I've worked with many schools that have, and it's been very frustrating, I think, to schools, because you may get a handful of parents that come, and oftentimes I think the sense from the parents that are there, I'm one of them as a parent that goes, are people that are already probably invested in these issues and or have a child who's being victimized. And I think a concern is, to what extent are we reaching those that we really need to reach with that. So I'm not saying that that's not effective. It's just, I think the schools often say, we are doing what we can, but it really, it's a whole community. It's a whole, it takes a lot from the parent angle about what the parents are doing. And thus far, we've focused a lot, which is appropriate for cyberbullying, on the technology and digital citizenship. But at the risk of sounding corny, a lot of it starts with, how do we treat other people face to face? How do we value other people and differences? And really, that's what we need to focus on early on. We absolutely need to talk about how that translates into the digital environment, how that's different when you can't see somebody's face.
So you just gotta watch what your kids are on, and you know, once you're connected to the outside world, you know, you have to watch. I mean, what's happening now is you have 8-year-olds that are, they have the same access that you or I would have.
Coming up in our final segment of WBFO's Education Experience, students discuss the difficult topic of losing a classmate. We'll have more from our Student Journals project, plus hear from education producer Johnny Moran with his reporter notebook on our education projects. But first, we bring you another musical clip of a very talented East Aurora High School teen, Christopher Koenig, a violinist. He appeared with the Buffalo Philharmonic on stage at Kleinhans in March for a recording of NPR's From the Top.